Hi everyone. So today we have a guest, a very special guest with us, someone who needs no introduction and someone who is all over social media and the news around AI and also around happiness. He is the happiness guru. But today I want to go a little bit deeper into understanding who is behind the happiness, or who is behind the happiness formula? Where did the happiness formula come from? So hi, Mo.
Thank you for having me. I think this is a bit of too much expectation for everyone. I'm not what she said. I just am searching and seeking like everyone else. But thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. And it's so good to see you in real life and to also just try and understand a little bit more about the happiness formula that works or has helped so many different people, but also the mission that you're on. So what is the mission that you're currently on, and what is the mission about?
Well, I had my life is a bit unusual for anyone that you know. I started my life as an executive, like a corporate employee that went all the way up to the most senior levels. I was running Google X's business side for a long time. I ran half of Google, and you know, top of my career was chief business officer of Google X. Like most of us, I wasn't happy at all. Yeah. And to be very honest, I couldn't agree that happiness was just about observing your breath or meditating, which, by the way, I don't disagree, brings a lot of centering to us, but it's not the answer if you want. And, the engineer that I am, I ended up deciding that I wasn't always unhappy, that there was a time in my life where this machine worked perfectly and whatever happened, I was happy. And so basically, like a software engineer, if you want, I basically convinced myself there is a bug in the code. Mm-hmm. Something went wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. And for that to be fixed, I needed to find a way to see what went wrong, to see why am I becoming unhappy. And I think the reality is, for all of us, unhappiness is really not the result of what life gives us. Bottom of my story, if you want, I lost my wonderful Ali, my wonderful son, who taught me a lot of what I know about happiness. And my response wasn't to lock myself in a room and grieve for the rest of my life. Of course, I miss him still today, 10 years later, tremendously. Of course, it's just there is so much. There is so much unlike our nature in losing our child. So don't get me wrong. You know, people think that I've sorted it out and that I'm, you know, through it. You're never through the loss of a child. You never really, really overcome it. But my response was the opposite. My response was, I'm going to write down what he told me. In my very unapologetic engineering logical approach to life, in a language that almost sounded in the early drafts of my first book as a corporate memo, if you want.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, I went on that mission where all I wanted at the beginning was to get 10 million people to know what my son taught me. Basically, when you accept that he's gone, at least you want to keep his essence alive.
Yeah.
10 million happened in 6 weeks. It was just very, very unusual. You know, if you read The Alchemist, when you know your life's purpose, the universe conspires to make it happen. So the universe conspired in ways I was not ready for.
Mm.
And suddenly the corporate executive, I was everywhere. My videos were viewed everywhere, and I don't measure video views. That's a very shallow way of measuring the mission. But I was measuring people who made the difference, who changed, right? Either by investing in themselves or investing in others, in the happiness of others. And so I started to reconsider my life. You know, this was 2017. I was still chief business officer of Google X, now a famous author. Bestseller, you know, I think the book launched initially in 30 languages, almost at the same time, bestseller in like 14 countries or languages. And I think it hit me really hard that perhaps my life should change, that this is more useful than writing another piece of code or making a little bit more money. But you know how we are. We delay the important things in life. And so I didn't do anything until I had this experience one day at Google X that really, really shifted my view of artificial intelligence and what we're doing and how humanity is bound to struggle with the upcoming new reality. And that's when I left. And, you know, that was March 2018. I mean, I resigned in, I think, November, October 2017. Mm-hmm. But of course, because of my seniority, I could only leave end of March 2018. And I issued my first video on 1 billion happy. 1 billion happy is a mission that's not about, most people think it's about, you know, remembering the memory of my son. 10 million happy, the original mission was. 1 billion happy truly is trying to change the value set, the cumulative value set of humanity in a way that artificial intelligence would, would basically copy that. Mm. And then we would all end up in a utopian future rather than if AI copies our value system today. I think we're all going to be in deep shit.
Yeah, yeah. And I've heard your podcast with AI. And for me, I want to go back to something that you've just said, because there's so many different things that you've just mentioned there. My brain is like, duh, 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 because there's so many powerful things that you've just said. But I think for me, I want to know more about, what does happiness mean to you? What does happiness mean for you?
Well, I think that's the greatest question of all, because, you know, happiness is completely blurred as a concept. And if you don't really know what you're looking for, you're never going to find it.
Yeah.
And I think, in marketing, there is something that, you know, there is a concept that's known as the four Ps, you know, the product, placement, pricing, and promotion, right? Promotion is the advertising bit of a product. And what ended up happening, I would say, in the late, in the 60s and 70s in the US, is that we discovered that advertising can brainwash people.
Yeah.
And that we can say whatever we want and sell whichever dream we want. And nobody really ever stops after they purchased the product and looks back and says, the promise wasn't, I bought the Coke can, but there was no girl in bikini. Like, you don't make that association that the ad had nothing to do with the product. And I think the reality is that this single shift in human history has turned us into dopamine junkies.
Mm.
We're just jumping from feel good moment to feel good moment, getting those jolts of dopamine in our blood that are either driven by, you know, achieving a sense of pleasure or achieving a sense of fleeting achievement.
Mm.
And, you know, it's a reward hormone. And because of that, we've started to define happiness as those moments. It's like a moment where I'm on the beach and, you know, in midair, I am, you know, really falling. But, you know, the photograph looked amazing, as if I'm catching the ball in the volleyball court or whatever. And it's those just constant little electrocutions of rewards. And we've defined this as happiness. It's that vacation or that buying that car or being, dating that tall, beautiful, or handsome partner. And you know, none of that, if you really think about it, makes you happy for more than a few minutes.
Yeah.
And most of it, as a matter of fact, causes you a lot of misery. It is that long, tall, you know, beautiful model that probably causes most misery, sometimes,
mm-hmm.
right? Because if it is just... if it's an action from you to feed that dopamine is very, very addictive, if you get, let's say, for simplicity, if you get 100 units of it in your blood now and you feel excited, you need 110 the next time to feel excited, and then 120. And this is why people who get addictive to parties go from, you know, one party to a wilder party to an even wilder party. And what used to excite you, a year ago doesn't excite you anymore.
Mm.
When in reality, happiness is almost exactly the opposite. Mm. Happiness is that moment of calm and peace where it doesn't matter what the world is around you, as long as you're okay with it.
Yeah.
Okay. If you're okay with life as it is, you get that very peaceful calm and contentment.
Yeah.
That you would almost feel like, I don't want this moment to end.
Mm.
Yeah, I still want the promotion and I still want my partner to, you know, be a little more romantic and I still want my commute to be easier. But at this moment, where I'm okay with life as it is, sitting in a Sunday morning when it's not raining and there is no memory of how annoying your boss is and no remorse around something that you did 16 years ago, you feel that calm. And that calm is what I define as happiness. And that calm, interestingly, is what we've all been seeking, although we're distracted by the dopamine shots. That calm is serotonin in your blood. It is basically, associated with a hormone that literally is exactly that description.
Mm.
It's a calmer.
Yeah. Mm? Yeah.
It tells you, I scanned the world around me and the world is okay. So you might as well, you know, digest your food and rest your muscles and replenish your body and, you know, focus on your liver functions. It's a very important survival moment for us to get that parasympathetic nervous system engaged and to feel okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's something really powerful about what you've just said about happiness and how sometimes we're striving for the next thing, the next thing, the next thing in life. And the next thing isn't enough. We're then looking for something else that's going to make it more. That's what we're seeking.
100%.
But actually, it feels like inside that peace, that calmness, that comes from inside. But what we're doing is, or what we've learned to do is, we need everything from the next thing, the next thing, the next thing to give us that dopamine fix, to give us that internal sort of feeling of, yes, I've made it. Yeah. But then it's gone just like that. So it comes and it's gone just like that. And then we're looking for the next thing. And before we know it, nothing is enough. Nothing is filling this void that we have within us that is enough. And then what we end up doing, or what I find a lot in the work that I do, is people get to that point and they're like, I've tried everything and nothing is working.
Yeah. Life is miserable.
Yeah.
And we blame life for it, even though, you know, life is amazing.
Yeah. And there's something really powerful about that is the, and this is where your happiness formula, I think, really works with individuals who hit that wall. Because when they hit that wall, it's like, why is life doing this to me? What's wrong with me?
Yeah.
What is wrong with me? And why does life keep doing it? It's almost like we feel life is doing it to us, but it's not, life is doing it to us. And I wonder how your happiness formula works with an individual who feels like the world has done something to them.
Well, I mean, so let's discuss the happiness equation. The equation is very simple. You feel happy at a moment where the events of life seem to meet your expectations of how life should behave.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you never, ever felt the same emotion as a result of a same trigger every time. Like, so, you know, if you recall the days when we were locked down under COVID, there were times when you would feel miserable because you can't go to the pub and chat with your friends, and other times where you feel okay because you don't have to go to work and, you know, mingle with all of those annoying people. And so basically the same event, it's the same event, and you can feel different ways about it. In my first book, Solve for Happy, I give an example of my wonderful wife then, ex now, who takes my car. I love cars and I restore them with my own hands. So they're not just cars to me, they're projects of beauty and art. And I had this beautiful, I know it's strange, but it's a Saab convertible twin turbo. Ugly like a shoe, but
car, I don't know what one of them looked like, but okay.
car lovers, we loved that car for some reason. It was in brand new condition. I put so much effort in it. It originally had 7,000 kilometers on it, and my wife takes it and crashes it.
Okay.
Right? Literally a head-on collision with a truck. And so car is unrecognizable. But Saab was known for their safety features. So my wife walks out without a scratch.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
My response in my mind is like, oh my God, life is so kind to me. My wife is safe.
Mm.
Right? Imagine if that scenario was that my wife parked the car on the sidewalk, on the side road, side of the road, and a truck hit it while she was inside a grocery store buying an apple.
Yeah.
Okay. And she would walk outside and the car is completely, totaled and you can't recognize it. What would my response be? that idiot hit my toy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's the exact same event. Car destroyed, wife safe.
Mm.
Mm? But we humans, we decide that if my wife was in the car, then life was very kind to me.
Yeah.
Okay? But if she was outside the car, which again, by the way, is an amazing gift because the car is hit and she's buying an apple.
Yeah.
No, that's not that kind. And it's all up to us how we tell ourselves the story.
Yeah.
Now, here's the interesting bit. The interesting bit is if you take what life actually is, you compare the events of life to realistic expectations, you compare an accurate description of the events of life to an actual realistic expectation. Anyone listening to us is one of the luckiest people alive.
Mm.
Yeah, your partner said something harmful or hurtful, or you know, you may be single and you don't have the love of your life yet, or maybe your boss is annoying, or not, but you have an electronic device on which you can watch or listen to a podcast. You are living in a country that probably speaks English, so you're not in the middle of Africa somewhere, walking 40 kilometers to work every day and back. You know, you're not starving to death, obviously, otherwise you wouldn't be listening to us. There is a roof on top of your head and no tigers in the room. You know, there is so much good out there, right? And you know, and if you really try to look at life that way, most of the time, life is kind, okay?
Yeah.
It's just that our expectations are so inflated. I was in Helsinki, was supposed to be here in London a couple of days ago, and, you know, the British government decided to change the policy around my passport, and so I had to apply for another visa and so on and so forth. Missed a couple of speaking engagements, had to rechange my trip.
Yeah.
You know, the trip coming here was very long, and as always, the Piccadilly line was cancelled. And, you know, all of that. You can all look at all of that. Today, I was late coming to you because, again, the Circle line decided to be late. And so I can look at all of this and I can say, what is this? This is horrible, right?
Yeah.
But I can tell myself, well, first of all, you were traveling.
Mm.
Not everyone gets the chance to travel.
Yeah.
You are wanted. Mm. You know, you know, Lalita still wants to see me. You are having that wonderful conversation with such a wonderful human.
Mm.
We are safe. The studio is beautiful. I can look at all of that, okay? Yeah. And I can say, yeah, it's been a little annoying in the last week.
Mm.
But hey, bigger picture, I'm alive.
Yeah.
You know what the odds of that are. Mm. Hmm?
Yeah. And it's something about gratitude when you're talking. When you're saying this, to me, gratitude comes up. It's the things that we have around us and the things that we're grateful for and that we feel so strongly. So it's, you know, we're grateful for having a roof over our heads. We're grateful for the receptionist outside understanding that it's okay that we're running late. It's understanding that we're actually very, very, like, we've got so many things around us, but we miss out on these little things because we get preoccupied with the frustration of this is what life's doing. This is what life, and it's like, but life isn't doing this to us. This is happening. And maybe it didn't go from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, which we thought life was going to be today. So you thought today, I'll get on the train at this time. I'll get on the train will go, I'll get off at this time and I can walk. But actually, life didn't go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Life
it never does.
1, 7, 4, 12.
And isn't that fun?
Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
By the way, I mean, who wants to play a video game that starts with pushing a controller forward and waiting for everything to happen exactly as you want it to be?
Yeah.
I mean, the interesting side of all of this is that it's not that we forget the good things or we take them for granted.
Yeah.
We somehow think that we've signed a service level agreement with life that says, hey, by the way, you're going to be fed every day.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have your health every day. Everything's going to be fine. I apologize if one day is, you know, the train is a little late. That's life never, I mean, show me the contract. If you have that contract, seriously, right? But if you stop taking those things for granted, the gratitude is the ultimate reinforcement of the happiness equation. You know, so happiness equation is your happiness is equal to or greater than the difference between the events of your life and your expectations of how life should be, right?
Mm.
So when you're grateful, you're reminding yourself of what your brain wants to take for granted. You're reminding yourself that the events are not only meeting our expectations, they're beating expectations so much that you're grateful for it.
Yeah.
right? And when that reminder comes in, by the way, nothing wrong with your brain. It's not your enemy. Your brain likes you, okay? It just has that tendency to try and put your safety above your happiness.
Yeah.
Okay? So it keeps telling you what's wrong with life because what's wrong matters for your safety.
Yeah.
It doesn't tell you what's right with life. Because when you know, knowing what is right doesn't make you safer.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's something really interesting about what you're saying there about safety. Because when people tend to go through a big life event that's unexpected. So just like yourself, you've been through a massive life event where you've lost your son in 2014. And when you're moving forward from that, often people feel life is unexpected. Anything can happen at any moment. And as a result of that, I need to stay safe. So I'm not going to continue doing things just in case life does something like this. So I need to stay safe now. And I wonder, you just laugh then, but I wonder, what is it or how, what would you say to someone who is staying safe and doesn't want to come out of that safety because they're worried or they're afraid of what might happen in life?
I mean, I planned everything for my son.
Yeah.
Okay. I bought him health insurance. I bought life insurance. I, put money in the banks for in his name. I started businesses in the majors that he studied. And my son was an explorer, so he changed majors 3 times. Every time he would change majors, I would start a business so that he runs it when he graduates. He goes into a hospital, is prescribed an appendix, appendectomy.
Yeah.
The simplest surgical operation known to humankind. Surgeon did it 400 times before, 420 times to be specific. Makes a mistake, my son dies.
Yeah.
Right? What safety?
Yeah.
When did you get that illusion?
Mm.
Right? And by the way, is safety in hiding from danger?
Mm.
Is that where it's found? Or is safety found in being able to deal with danger?
Mm.
Okay? To be able to be able to address the challenges as they come along is a much, much more powerful way than to hide away from them.
Yeah.
Okay. And you know, if you're not having the courage to face those challenges, let me ask you a question.
Mm.
When was the last time your biggest fear came true?
Yeah.
Okay. 99% of the time, your brain is exaggerating fear because it wants you to take action. I always recall when my lovely ex-wife would speak about the kids and say, your daughter's been sick all winter.
Mm.
Just because it's the second time she has a flu when we're almost approaching, spring.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, why? Because the loving heart of a mother wants to make sure that the daughter's okay, that safety obsession is so high that the second flu becomes a real issue.
Mm.
Okay. So most of the time that exaggerated response of fear is a response that makes us stuck. And I say there is a logic to this. Once you ask yourself, when was the last time my biggest fear came true?
Mm.
Okay. 99% of the time, it never really happened.
Yeah.
And by the way, whenever any of my fears came true, you know what's so surprising? You're still here.
Yeah.
You've survived.
Yeah.
You've managed,
yeah.
Right? You know, it's like, what would happen if he tells me this on the first date and then he tells you this on the first date and you go like, that's not funny. And life goes on.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And no fear, nothing. None of it actually exists at all. I think the challenge with fear, and this is part of my work on my fourth book coming out in January, Unstressable, is that fear itself is not the issue.
Yeah.
Okay? So around fear, I say there are other responses that are epidemic in nature, right?
Yeah.
So fear is, I know that there is a threat ahead of me, like a moment in the future is less safe to me than a moment right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Below fear, there is worry.
Mm-hmm.
And worry is, I suspect there might be a threat.
Yeah.
Okay. Above fear, there is anxiety.
Yeah.
And anxiety is, I know there is a threat, but I doubt I'll be able to deal with it. I don't have the capability to deal with it.
Mm.
And then there is panic,
which
is, there is a threat, I know, and it's imminent.
Mm.
It's coming fast.
Yeah.
Right? And our responses to those, we pluck all of them together as fear. We, you know, when we get any of those feelings, we try to hide and say, let me protect myself from the threat.
Yeah.
Okay. By the way, there is fight or flight. Mm-hmm. So hiding, you know, flight is not the only answer. Okay. And by the way, fight is not the only answer as well. These are physical dangers. What you should probably do is to find something in the middle that I normally call engage, mm-hmm. right? Is to look at the threat and say, can I deal with that threat?
Yeah.
You know, reduce its intensity or avoid it somehow, right? But that's when you're dealing with fear, mm-hmm. when you're dealing with worry, you shouldn't even think about the threat.
Yeah.
You should spend your brain cycles trying to verify that there is a reason to fear.
Yeah.
Because if there is no reason to fear, go on, live life and be happy. If there is a reason to fear, start to engage.
Yeah.
Right? Anxiety, which is the biggest epidemic, if you want, of our time. What's the difference between the pandemic and academic? I have an epidemic. I don't know. Anyway.
Another episode.
Okay. Yeah. But you know, when it comes to anxiety simply, if you spend your time thinking about the threat, like we all do when we're anxious, you're not doing any good for yourself. You should think about your capability and say, how can I increase my capability to deal with the threat?
Yeah.
Okay. And or actually verify if you do have the capability, but your brain is exaggerating, right?
Yeah.
When you're dealing with panic, don't think about the threat. Think about the element of time. How can I give myself more time? If I'm panicking about a presentation approaching, can I delay it? Okay. Yeah. Or can I cancel other things so that I give it more time?
Yeah.
Right. So once you start to deal with those things, start to see fear as just a very interesting signal to trigger your right action.
Yeah.
Okay. And you start to see that excessive fear is very unwarranted, because what you were afraid of never actually happened. And you know, at a Jedi Master level, you start to realize that you're stuck, unalive. When you're in fear.
Yeah.
When, you know, someone like me, I mean, I'm old and I've seen a lot of crap in my life. But, you know, the prospects of something changing in the future, something a little worthy of engaging in the future, to me is like a roller coaster ride. It's like, yay, fun times. It was so boring, right? You know, when my trip changes and I'm not able to come here on time, you know, customer is going to be upset. That's one fear. 800 people were supposed to wait for me to speak on stage. Another fear, they're going to be upset. Some of them are going to curse me. I'm going to be canceled on social media. We all get those responses.
Yeah.
And then you go like, oh, hold on. Most of that is not real at all. And by the way, the ones that are real, let's deal with them.
So it sounds like what you're saying is you do have the thoughts that come up. So the thoughts do come up of, oh, what if I get cancelled? What if this happens?
I want to get cancelled. That one. Yeah, I mean, we were just talking, you know.
Yeah.
And I soon will be, because I don't, you know, hold back on some of my opinions. But but I think the idea is that, you know, it really, really is a human nature.
Yeah.
Unhappiness and all negative emotions are a survival mechanism.
Yeah.
Okay. If you didn't feel stressed, you wouldn't put in the effort. If you didn't feel bored, we wouldn't have a civilization, right?
Yeah.
Bored is being underwhelmed with life as it is. So a typical response to boredom in normal humans is to actually create a life that you're not underwhelmed with.
Yeah.
Of course, the modern response is to binge watch Netflix, but that's not really the right way to do it. Okay. And every one of those emotions as it engages, has a purpose. It's telling you a message. It's subtle and blended, but it's telling you something that's good for you. So if you embrace it and react to it, you create a better life to yourself.
And there's something really powerful about what you've just said. It's almost like you're trying to develop that relationship with your worry, with your fear, with your anxiety when it comes up. So it's not that your anxiety or your worry is in the driver's seat. It's more that you're in the driver's seat, your anxiety is a passenger, and you can have a conversation with your anxiety or with your worry, so it doesn't then take over and stop you from doing the things that you want
to do. I hug them. I embrace them. It's really, I mean, honestly, do you like sweet and sour?
Yeah.
It's not because of the sweet only. Yeah. It's the sweet and sour.
Yeah.
You see, this is what most people don't understand. Huh? You know, I appear to be a very logical, business executive who is a writer and busy man. I am a life junkie. Okay.
What is a life junkie?
A life junkie is not someone who wants to travel to every corner of the world and wants to taste every fruit that ever was created and wants to jump off every mountain. A life junkie is someone who lives every second that is presented to them. Okay.
Yeah.
Because you don't putting your life on hold until you're surfing to feel alive is wrong. Now, when do we feel alive, Lalita? We feel alive when we feel. Okay.
Yeah.
There has never been a memory that you cherished that was a memory of an algebra equation you solved.
Yeah.
Everything that happens in your head is not living. Living, most of what happens in our head is past anchored or future anchored, right? It's not living. Living is here and now. And living is sensed in pleasures, pains, aches and comforts, and it's felt in positive and negative emotions.
Yeah.
Okay, it's the sweet and the sour. When you're feeling something, you're alive.
Yeah.
If you don't feel anything, you're inside your head.
And I have to hear people say, "I don't want to feel the negative things. I don't want the negative things." But actually, we get more growth and lessons and learning through the negatives, and we call it negatives, but is it just because it becomes difficult and it's unexpected and that's why we perceive it as negative, and then it's harder to try and manage because we have to rearrange things now in our minds?
This is Jedi Master level. So let's take this easier.
Yeah.
We get conditioned to love certain things.
Yeah.
Okay. Like my muscles are now hurting me because I was in the gym yesterday.
Yeah.
Is that a negative feeling or a positive feeling?
Mm.
Okay. Sometimes when some of us will feel this feeling and say, next time I'm not going to push it that much. Yeah. I feel that feeling and say, next time I'm going to eat more protein, but I love that sensation. That sensation is a wonderful sensation for me.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, most spiritual teachings will teach you how to embrace and tune into emotions, tune into sensations. One of my favorite meditations, I know it sounds quite masochistic, sadistic, is I put a drop of water on the tip of my nose and I wait for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't allow myself to touch it. And you can go nuts and your mind can go crazy because of that drop.
Yeah.
But if you manage to tune into that sensation, the world goes silent.
Yeah.
You're completely in that drop, in that dot on your nose, and that's it, right? Now, when we mark something as negative, we start to avoid it. A typical example, you and I on my podcast are talking a lot about love and dating and relationships and romance and so on. Typical example is heartbreaks after a relationship.
Yeah.
Okay. And a heartbreak after a relationship feels awful. Man, woman, straight, gay, if you fell in love, losing someone is a very big, a very big transition that triggers a very serious pain. Okay. Or does it? Should it?
Yeah.
Okay. So there is one of two ways you can look at a breakup. One is I failed. I wanted that person in my life more. I'm an idiot. What did I do wrong?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The other response is, oh my God, I loved, I experienced, it was amazing. She was wonderful. Okay. We now have space to evolve into a different relationship, the two of us. And I now have space to have other experiences in my life. Yes, the pain is there.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, I wish it was different. Okay. Or maybe I don't know. Sometimes you want the breakup, right? But it's the turning, the pivoting from looking at the past and saying, oh, this was horrible, to looking at the past and saying, oh my God, this was amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. By the way, whatever happened, it was amazing.
Yeah.
And looking at the future and saying, and that is bright.
Yeah.
And looking within yourself and saying, instead of saying that I am an idiot, saying, oh my God, I managed to love again. Isn't that amazing? Right?
Do you feel like people, like what allows one person to take that approach and someone else to take that approach? What do you think helps someone who is going through a breakup, who has lost someone, How do they go from that to that?
Lots of conditioning, lots of victimhood.
Hmm.
Okay? You know, and many other reasons, but I think these are the top two reasons.
Okay.
One, I don't know how to say that lightly, but unless you've done the work,
yeah,
very few of your thoughts are your own.
Hmm.
Okay? Very few of your thoughts are what you actually feel, what you actually sense, what you actually reason.
Yeah.
Okay? Most of your thoughts are the sound of your mom, the sound of your friends, the sound of social media, the sound of Mo when he spoke on the podcast and said something that got you thinking.
Yeah.
Right? It's actually very difficult for most of us to know what's real and true to us.
Mm.
Right? And most of our conditioning triggers neuroplasticity.
Yeah.
Okay. So if I deal with a lot of people who struggle with grief.
Yeah. Mm? Yeah.
And grief is very different across nations.
Mm-hmm.
Mm? So there are nations, you know, in the developing countries, where a big chunk of grief is what will they think of me if I don't wear black?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. And it is actually quite a big thing. Mm? Yeah. You know, the idea of a woman who loses a loved husband,
mm.
Mm, and telling the whole world, "I'm never gonna love again.
Yeah.
I'll wear black for the rest of my life,"
yeah,
is a bit of an ego positioning of, "Look at me, I am that kind of woman."
Yeah,
right. And all of that conditioning at the beginning forms our opinions,
mm,
and every time we repeat those opinions inside our heads, we reinforce it through neuroplasticity until it becomes who we are.
Mm.
When in reality, it's not who you are at all.
Yeah.
Okay. In reality, who you are is a very interesting, I call it the arbitrage test.
Mm.
Okay. And the arbitrage test is very straightforward. Huh?
Yeah.
It is, I compare what's in my mind,
mm-hmm,
to what's in my heart, to how I act.
Yeah.
If the three don't match, then there's something wrong.
Yeah.
One of them is off.
Mm.
Okay. So if, you know, and I'll give an example, and I'm not shy. I loved my wife, for 27 years, never once flirted.
Mm.
Okay. I loved her dearly. And so when we had to move on, you know, because we were not matching anymore, it took me quite a bit of time,
mm,
for me to convince myself, yeah, to even date another woman.
Yeah.
Okay. Took me a bit of time to convince myself that for 27 years I was conditioned and actually loved being a one woman's man.
Mm.
Right. And it took me a bit of time to say, so what am I looking for? Am I looking for another 27 years of one experience?
Yeah.
Okay. Or am I looking for something different?
Mm. Mm?
And you do the arbitrage test. My brain says you're a one-woman man.
Yeah.
Okay. You're better off not even looking at any other woman other than your 27-year wife for the rest of your life. Or if you do, she'd better be one.
Mm.
Right? My heart was like, oh, but I've delivered on my responsibilities and I'd really love to explore the world. Okay? And my actions... Do I need to explain? Like when you've broken up,
yeah,
after 27 years, right? So which of them is me?
Hmm.
And it doesn't matter, by the way, which of them is me. Yeah. I'm still trying to find out which is me.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think that's really important, isn't it? To try and understand that that question comes up a lot. Who am I? Who am I? And
That's the only question.
Yeah.
That's the only question.
Yeah.
And so you were saying, why is it that some of us would go into a love relationship,
mm,
and break up and feel bad?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
A trillion sets of conditioning.
Mm.
Okay. That where you define yourself by the Hollywood, or what I call the Disneywood, mm, Disney and Hollywood definition of what romance is.
Yeah.
Okay. And if you're not that definition, then you've failed.
Yeah.
Okay. Or, you know, what will my family think of me? Or what was my lifetime dream when I was six?
Mm.
And I kept dreaming that dream until I'm 36.
Yeah.
And it's still my same dream. Is it really?
Mm.
You had it when you were six. I established the concept of a one-woman man,
mm,
when I was married at 25.
And you mentioned about, and it's only until you do the work. What do you mean by that?
There is, so the concept of the work is a beautiful concept, because
spirituality and self-development is often associated with being.
Yeah.
Okay, and you would find the bias in those who are spiritual to the feminine energy of being.
Mm.
Okay, I am an engineer, right? So dreaming a building doesn't build it.
Yeah.
You have to do the work,
mm-hmm.
right? And the work is confusing because, you know, unless you do what you know what you're doing, and none of us knows what we're doing when we're exploring finding ourselves, you need to actually navigate. It's a quest. You take a couple of steps forward, assess, then look left and right, and then decide to take a step left and keep moving, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it requires doing. It requires the masculine energy of doing,
mm-hmm.
okay? And it's interesting because doing is mostly internal work. Hmm? And doing, believe it or not, is to also trigger states of being, states of awareness, states of unapologetic confrontation with yourself, okay? And it's quite interesting because most of, how do I say this? We are born, in my view, in our ultimate form. Mm. So kids are enlightened.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
They're amazing.
You see them playing, doing whatever, not worrying about anyone.
Absolutely full of love, no judgment, no fear.
Yeah.
Ego, nothing. They have none of the shit that we acquire along the way.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And then you fall out of that state.
Yeah.
Mm? And the interesting thing is that most of the work is entirely about going back.
Yes.
To tell yourself,
yes.
Why do I not want to date that woman?
Mm.
Is it because my friends will think this way? Is it because my religious upbringing will tell me that?
Yeah.
Is it because I'm afraid of the pain that that other woman caused me?
Mm.
Is it because?
Yeah.
Okay? With total hug, like a total hug of yourself to say, and by the way, baby, no wrong answers.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Just tell me what you feel.
Mm.
Tell me what you feel.
Yeah. Mm?
Tell me why is it that you're not comfortable in this situation? Tell me why is it that you're afraid of that situation?
Yeah.
Okay? And you can invite a good friend in, not the kind of friend that will always tell you you're beautiful. Those are a waste of time. Okay? Those I call cheerleaders, right? You want a friend that basically says, oh yeah, I've considered that too.
Yes.
Or tells you to your face, what did you just say? That's stupid.
Yeah.
That's not true at all.
Mm.
Okay? You know, and I think your best friend, by the way, is for you to have that conversation, the arbitrage test.
Yeah.
If there is a mismatch between your heart, your mind, and your actions,
yeah.
find out which one is you.
Yeah. Okay? That's a really great formula to use when you're feeling overwhelmed, you're feeling confused, you're feeling like, what do I do in this situation? It's like, actually, let me try out and this test and just see what is it that's going on
here. Which one is me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which one am I oppressing? Are you oppressing your heart? Okay, which one am I forcing? Are you forcing your actions?
Mm.
Which one is a nutcase, your mind?
Yeah.
Okay, and just find out.
Yeah.
Mm? And by the way, most of the, so we said that conditioning gets you to be in a place where most of us think of life, of love, as that one shot that needs to last forever.
Mm.
Okay. Well, I dream of a one shot that would last forever.
Yeah.
I honestly say that publicly, but I doubt very much from a probabilities point of view that it will come without a lot of work.
Yeah.
Okay. I doubt very much that it's possible.
Mm.
For you know, I sadly wrote about love and romance several times. Never going to publish that book. I'm on my seventh attempt. I'm not going to publish that book, I think. But the statistics.
You say I think, so it's never.
You don't know. But the statistics are staggering.
Yeah.
Right. The statistics will tell you that half of all marriages in the West break, end up in divorce.
Yeah.
Right. And you go like, oh, that's horrible.
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's much better than the actual statistics, which is 98% of all get-togethers end up in breakups.
Yeah.
Because not all love stories, not all dates end up in marriage.
Yeah.
Okay, so when you take a simple calculation, any simple mathematician would have done that. I simply decided to look at the number of lifetime partners.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that depends where you are in the world. But in the West, on average, depending of your sexual orientation, your gender identity, your generation, and so on. But you could say that we have on average between 15 and 17, 18 lifetime encounters. So if you divide that, you'll find out that 98%. Okay,
it's a huge number, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
But even in your own life, 17 out of the 18 ones broke up.
Yeah.
Okay. Which basically means, and we don't know if the 18th will stay, by the way.
Yeah.
But that's the whole idea. Yeah. The whole idea is when it becomes 98%, a person like me deals with it as a fact.
Yeah.
Okay. So suddenly I adjust my expectations instead of my crazy hopes and wishes and beliefs that life should behave. It's just a fact.
And so you spoke about adjusting. So you, what you do is your initial thing is you feel it, but then you adjust it to get to another state where that state then doesn't feel overwhelming.
I have a brutal loyalty to truth.
Okay.
Okay. So the way I write books is I write the last sentence in the book first.
Okay.
Okay. And then I go backwards and write 200 to 350 pages to convince you of that last sentence.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
The last sentence of Soul for Happy was what?
I don't remember.
Yeah. Was happiness is found in the truth.
Happiness is found in the truth.
It really is that simple.
Okay.
Okay. That was the sentence. Happiness is found in you looking at the reality of life as it is and saying, yeah, I wish he was taller. Yeah. By the way, I wish I was 6'3". I wish. I'm not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If you keep holding on to that, I wish, it's again, it's not truth. It's not fact.
Yeah.
It's not. And you're going to keep wishing something that isn't going to be, it's not going to happen. And then you end up feeling not so good about it. So your entire life, every time you see someone who is 6'3", I'm not like that. Not like that.
And by the way, I don't know if anyone who's 6'3" wishes to be 5'9". Okay. Like I am. And no, I don't know if anyone, if I actually became 6'3" through a miracle of the universe, would that like solve all of my problems in life?
I'll probably say
I want dreadlocks, right?
It's the next thing. There's always a next thing. To the same thing that we started with.
Right. But there is a brutal loyalty to the fact that, by the way, Mo, I've scanned this little planet called Earth, and there is no scientific discovery and no miracle that ever happened for someone at your age to grow from 5'9 to 6'3". It's not going to happen. You're 5'9".
Mm.
Can you deal with that?
Mm.
Okay. Can we stop that, romantic, dreamy, unrealistic view of life and deal with it as it is?
Mm.
Okay.
And do you feel you can go from there to there and you're...
Because I have a brutal loyalty to the truth, I also have a very systemic way of making sure when I agree that something is true, it actually is true.
Yeah.
Okay. And so a lot of things remain in my mind in where I call compartment two.
Mm.
As a matter of fact, the majority of life is in compartment two. Compartment one is when you know that something is false.
Okay.
Compartment three is when you know something's false.
Yeah.
Compartment one is when you know something is true.
Okay.
And compartment two is in the middle.
Okay.
You don't know.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I don't know what your belief is about afterlife.
Mm.
Right. Some people will say, yeah, we die and we vanish. Some people will say, no, it's reincarnation. And others will say, no, you die and then it's heaven and hell.
Mm.
Okay. Absolutely no scientific way on the planet to prove for either or against either.
Mm.
Okay. So that remains in compartment two for me, which is I believe it might be this and that. But that's just a belief. That's not the truth at all.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you're intelligent enough, you should behave taking all three in mind.
Yeah.
So you should solve your life once for this is it and will vanish.
Mm.
You should solve it another time for reincarnation. You should solve it a third time for heaven and hell.
Yeah.
Okay. In all three of them, by the way, the common subset of algebra of what you should do is you should simply live fully.
Mm.
Okay. And be good to others.
Yeah.
Simple.
Yeah.
Right? But you've solved for all three.
Mm.
Mm? And you've allowed yourself the brutal honesty of, I don't know the answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I don't know the answer to if I will find someone that comes into my life that will stay forever.
Yeah.
Okay. Every now and then I get this incredibly beautiful, wonderful, amazing woman in my life. And it's just so wonderful and so on. And then we all know what happens. 6, 12 months later, you're like,
yeah.
Is this it? Is this not it? You know, life pushes you apart. She goes somewhere, you go somewhere, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. And the romantics will say, it's worth a fight. And you, and so what if it's long distance? Yeah. And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Okay. I travel 240 days of my year.
Yeah.
Okay. It's very, very, very difficult to give that woman what she deserves or for that she gives me what I desire when this is the setup. And that's it. It's the truth. Yeah. Okay. So what can we do? We can sit down and have a conversation and say openly, look, this is the truth. The truth that leads us to this situation or that situation. Let's sit with as a union and look at them and decide.
Yeah.
Okay. And that applies to everything in your life. I could not get into the UK to do my talks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Truth. You sit down and you tell yourself, first you debate, is it compartment 1, 2, or 3? Yeah. If it's in compartment 1, all right, that's it. Stop resisting it.
Did you use the same compartment 1, 2, and 3 with dealing with the grief of your son?
Of course.
Okay.
So one of my first of all, you have to understand it. So I would say very religious and not religious at all at the same time. Okay, I was born a Muslim, grew up a Muslim, and then I studied every religion I could put my hands on in my early 20s, my late teens, early 20s. I studied all of them to a very serious level of depth.
Mm-hmm.
I have news for you. They're so beautiful, all of them, and they're full of crap.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And you know, and again, you have to put that in compartment one, that they have lots of beautiful nuggets of gold in them, and compartment one, and they're full of crap. Okay? Compartment one as well.
Yeah.
Right? And so as a response, I decided over time to pick the ones, the those nuggets of wisdom and keep them in my life and to ignore the crap and restudy it every now and then to see if I changed my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Fair, right? Yeah. Most religious teachings will have a very different view of life and death than not being religious.
Yeah.
Okay? And in my scientific mind, I studied death deeply.
Okay?
Not from biology point of view, not from spirituality point of view, not from philosophy point of view, from quantum physics and theory of relativity point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I, not the day to discuss that, but I can tell you with very strong conviction that we never really die.
Yeah.
Okay? That what decays is your physical form, and that the essence of you, which some religions will call a soul, others will call consciousness, others will call I don't know what, call it what you want. I call it the real you.
Yeah.
The real you never dies.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, this to me is not a belief. This to me, if I explain the physics to you, is compartment one for sure. Okay. Right. So my son never died.
Yeah.
Okay. My son's body decayed.
Okay.
Okay.
I hear that.
My body will decay too. That's an actual compartment one. That's 100% guarantee that it could be right after we finish this conversation, could be in the middle of the conversation, or it could be a few years from now.
Yeah.
But sooner or later, we know for a fact that no human has ever escaped death.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so if that is the truth, then I know for a fact that my son and I will be in the same place.
Yeah.
Okay? I know that more as a fact than I know if I will live another hour.
Yeah.
Okay, if you see that, and if you also recognize that at my current age, life passed by like this.
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't know how much longer I will live, 20 minutes or 20 years.
Yeah.
It will also pass like this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that sooner or later I'll be there.
Yeah.
Right. There is a very deep sense of comfort in that.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, it doesn't matter if it's 20 minutes or 20 years.
Yeah.
What matters is how I will live them.
Mm-hmm.
That's what matters. Okay. What matters is you know, as I always try to teach, you know, I'm a successful businessman, a successful investor. I understand the concept of a portfolio of valuable assets that you keep in your life and all of that crap. Okay? The truth, Lalita, is that we have one asset in life.
Yeah.
Your heartbeats. One asset.
Yeah.
That's the only thing you're given and the only thing that actually matters. It's the only currency that you turn into everything else.
Yeah. Yeah.
You turn it into money, you turn it into success, you turn it into books, you turn it into podcasts. All that we're doing is we consume a few of the heartbeats we have in the bank account and we create things. That's the game. The game is when my son left our world, I had somewhere around, if you assume I will live to the average age, somewhere around maybe 15 billion heartbeats left.
Yeah.
Okay? And the question is, what do you want to do with them?
Yeah.
Do you want to spend them in a room crying? Okay? Knowing for a fact in compartment one that this is not going to bring him back.
Yeah.
Okay? Or do you want to spend them making a lot of people around the world happier?
Yeah.
Do you want to spend them fully experiencing and ascending in life and learning and refining yourself and comparing your mind, heart, and actions and getting to that essence of who you really are?
Yeah.
Okay. Or do you want to spend them lost?
Yeah.
Going to the pub and drinking and, you know, waking up in the morning and saying, why did I do that again?
Yeah.
Right.
And the thing is, when big events like this happen in our lives, we have choices. We have, there's two choices. One choice is, I'm just going to escape this. I'm going to escape it. I don't want to continue living in this way. And there's a second way, which is the way that you've chosen, is finding that real meaning, really questioning and understanding the essence of life and really connecting with your heart and thinking, actually, you know what? This is the route I want to go down. I want to make a difference. I want to change from what I've learned. It's almost like something woke you up, something awakened within you.
Yeah, I call it committed acceptance.
Yeah.
And committed acceptance, again, is Jedi Master level. So I don't mean I'm advanced, but this is what I learned from the masters.
Yeah.
Okay? The real masters will tell you that when life twists your arms, you know, don't resist. It's mighty.
Yeah. Yeah.
Life is mighty.
Okay? What I hear is Yoda, like, saying this. I just imagine Yoda from Star Wars.
I love Yoda.
So when you talk of the Jedi Master, I'm like, there's a little Yoda.
Green Mo. It's the truth. I mean, it is really, there is so much wisdom in the world. If you follow the right teachers,
They
teach you so much. Huh? Yeah. The truth is, you are here for one reason only, which is to ascend.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
You're given, every time the game switches on, switch on the console, you switch on your controller, they hand you over 4 billion heartbeats.
Yeah.
Okay?
And you choose.
And you decide.
Yeah.
Okay? You can spend heartbeats on a waste of time. You can spend your heartbeats complaining.
Yeah.
Okay? You can spend your heartbeats fighting with your lover.
Mm.
Okay? Or you can spend them embracing your lover or talking to him or her and saying, hey, we're not a great match anymore. Yeah. Then spend a few million heartbeats to find another one.
Mm.
Then a few million heartbeats to be wild and go and do something that you never thought you're supposed to do. And another heartbeat another 2,000 heartbeats to do something taboo and then go like, that's not really what I wanted in life. As long as you don't hurt others with your heartbeat, which in an understanding of karma, is a very, very, very bad use of your life, okay? Because you're going to have to pay back for it with more heartbeats, right? As long as you don't hurt somebody, can you, you know, if I think of yourself as a child and I take you to Disneyland and tell you, okay, now you have $200, do what you want, okay? Will you take all of the $200 and buy T-shirts, or will you buy a T-shirt and some candy and then have ice cream and then go to do those rides and then experience the whole park? Okay. And the objective of our experience here in this life is very straightforward. Heartbeats for wisdom.
Simple
as that. It's the only target you have. You know why? Because believe it or not, unlike what advertising told us, fun doesn't make you happy.
Yeah.
Wisdom does. Mm,
yeah.
Okay? Most people don't understand that the happiest people I know on this planet are the ones that looked at all of life and said,
yeah,
yeah, I get it.
Yeah,
I get it is where happiness sets in.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. And often I see, even in the work that I do, is people, they're constantly striving for the next thing. They've got the car, they've got the house, they've got the family. And they're like, this isn't giving me what I thought it was going to give me. And that's where they hit that block, that sort of brick wall. And they're like, I don't know what else I need to do. I thought this was going to give me happiness. And it's in that moment they start to look within and start to understand, hang on, what is life really about? And that's where they break down the conditions, the rules, the beliefs that they thought they needed to live life by. And that's where the uncovering happens. And it's beautiful. It's so beautiful to see the change, but then really investing in themselves and seeing that actually this is the way I want to live life. Really connecting back to the heart and thinking, what feels right for me? There's a real power in that.
Yeah. It's so interesting when you get to that moment where you go like, I ran and ran and ran and none of it made me happy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And suddenly I would always say, and so instead of continuing to ask yourself, what will make me happy? Ask yourself, what in this moment is happy?
Yeah.
That's it. What right now is happy?
Yeah. Mm?
So, you know, all of the struggle that it took me to arrive here and all of the struggles that I will get to come to the UK next time.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, how can I make that easier and how can I plan it differently? And maybe I shouldn't land in Heathrow. Maybe I should fly to Spain and from there come to London City Airport or whatever, that crazy crap. Okay. Or maybe I say, I am in the presence of a wonderful soul. Okay, I don't know if, you know, our listeners will feel there is this deep connection.
Yeah.
Okay, where I'm looking in your eyes, I feel you, I hear you, you feel me. It's beautiful.
I forgot the cameras were there for
100%, right?
Yeah.
And that's life itself.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know why? Because for as long as this lasts, it's all of life.
Yeah.
It's all of life. And if you learn that when this ends, you go to the next chapter.
Yeah.
And do the same, that's the rest of your life.
Yeah.
That's the rest of your life. No, nothing is wrong.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with you. I think that's the biggest sort of takeaway. It's like there's nothing wrong with you because things have happened. It's almost like let's sit and understand what is this teaching us? What is it that's coming up for us with this thing that's happened to give us insight, to give us wisdom? Because if we think of Yoda and what Yoda used to say, Jedi's were like, I want this and I want this. And it's like, no, we're not having this. We're not having it right now.
Yeah.
You have to learn the lesson. They're like, what's the lesson? And then they get there. I understand now. I get it. Why?
And then they don't want it anymore.
Yeah.
Okay. And you know, if we're on the Jedi Master level, the most interesting bit in all of that is that you at this moment are perfect. As evident by the fact that you are in this moment, you made it here.
Yeah.
Okay, you're present fully. You're feeling it. Yeah. You're perfect.
I'm breathing. I can hear my heart. I keep touching my heart. I'm like, yep, okay, I can feel it. I'm here. And there's something really...
And nothing wrong with you.
Yeah.
There is in this very moment, there is never anything wrong with you.
Mm.
And there's never anything wrong with life. The only thing that can go wrong with life is you die.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And by the way, I don't think that's wrong at all.
Mm.
But between now and then, life is either moments of joy or moments of development and learning.
Yeah.
How can I complain about that?
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing. And just to say, we have covered so many different topics today and I can carry on talking to you forever because you just understand it. You get it. And there's so many different parts of your life that you've got all this wisdom and you've understood, you've made sense of it. And you're in a space now where it's like, I'm going with the flow. Whatever comes up, it will come up and that's okay. And it feels so beautiful that you're in that flow and that rhythm of life.
Yeah, I'll try my absolute best. I'll try to have as much impact as I can. That's the masculine energy.
Yeah.
But I'll go with the flow wherever life takes me. I'll enjoy the hell out of it.
Yeah.
Because it's a wonderful game. And that's the feminine side.
And one thing I want to ask, or one thing I tend to ask at the end is, if someone has hit that brick wall, what do you feel you can give them as advice to them when they've hit that brick wall and they're sitting thinking, why is life doing this to me? What would you say to them?
Life is doing nothing at all. All that life wants is to be lived. Okay? With its bitter and sweet.
Mm.
Okay? life just wants you to live.
Yeah.
So live.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't get stuck.
Yeah.
And if you just unstick yourself a little bit and engage, serendipity will open up so many doors for us. I did a very unusual experiment to understand what luck is.
Mm.
Okay. And I was writing the first book I wrote after Soul for Happy, which I never published. It was called Understanding Fate. And
you have so many book titles that are amazing.
I write for me.
Okay.
So I was attempting to write for me why Ali left.
Okay. Mm? Yeah.
And Understanding Fate, basically you had to understand luck. Like, why are some people luckier than others?
Mm.
Mm? And so what did I do? I went out and I said, I'm going to search for US dollar cents, you know, the bronze ones. Within the next 3 weeks, I found 137 of them.
Yeah.
Everywhere in the world. I was in New York City for 2 days of those 3 weeks. Okay. And I found them in India.
Mm.
I found them in Dubai. I found them in London airports. I found them everywhere, 137 of them. And I was like, this is really weird. Like, why don't I find something more interesting?
Mm.
Okay. So I said, in the next couple of days, I will look for jewelry.
Yeah.
And I was on Broadway in New York City. Broadway is a very, very busy street. Mm? And I remember standing with my back against shopfront, looking at what looked like an antique diamond ring.
Yeah.
On the floor, okay, for at least 15 minutes.
Yeah.
As somewhere around 700-800 people walked over it and nobody saw it.
Yeah.
While I saw it. Okay. And I decided I'm not gonna pick it up. I'm gonna just stand next to it and see if they see it.
Yeah.
Okay. From a mathematics point of view,
yeah.
From a mathematics point of view, every single one of the people that walked by that ring had the same probability to pick it up, like I did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, the only difference was I expected to find it. I was looking at the pavement. I was looking for jewelry.
Yeah.
Do you understand what that means?
Yeah, yeah.
It means that we, when we open up to life, we get luck. We create luck.
Yeah.
Okay, because the mathematical probability of me walking by a diamond ring today in London is exactly the same as everyone else walking that street in London. I will find it if I expect it to happen. Yeah. Now, for most of us, when we get stuck because we say, I want life to be exactly 14 centimeter wide, color green at the beginning and bright red at the end. I don't want any high-pitched people in my life. I want the drinks to be a little less sweet, and I want the percentage of quinoa in my life to be 30% more. Good luck.
Yeah.
Okay. Or alternatively, you could say, I'm gonna walk Broadway, and I'm gonna see what life gives me.
Yeah.
And whatever it gives me, I'm gonna take it in and love it.
Yeah.
Okay. When you do, something really interesting happens. Huh? You get unstuck.
Yeah.
You move from Broadway, then you go into a coffee shop, and then a beautiful person tells you something funny, and then the coffee spills on your face, and then you go meet the doctor, and it suddenly becomes a romantic comedy.
Yeah.
Okay. Just because you decided to walk out, look at the pavement, and see if there is a diamond ring there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like when you're rushing in the morning. It's like, I need to get this. You just rush, and you're out the door, and you miss the beautiful things. You miss what your plan looks like. You miss the sunrise. You miss the beauty in every day. And when people come and I'm working with people and even friends, I'll say to them, what were you grateful for today? And they'll always say, well, I don't know. Like, I don't know. Don't ask me that question. Stop doing your psychology stuff on me. And I'm like, I'm not. I'm asking you genuinely.
So
like,
much.
What is it? I was like, I saw this bird on the fence, and it was just beautiful, at peace. And people look at me like, what? And I'm like, but there's so much beauty, there's so much magic,
so much
in the world,
beauty.
But we have to choose to see it. If you keep looking outside and looking for the yellow car, all you're going to keep seeing is the yellow car, and you 100%. Miss all the other colors.
100%. You know how Yoda would look at this? Instead of, what was I grateful for today? What today was worthy of my gratitude?
Yeah.
What wasn't?
Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly and truly, what wasn't Lalita? I mean, every bit of it. I was late, stuck in that circle line.
Yeah.
Coming to you here.
Yeah.
There was this gorgeous woman sitting on the other side. Okay. Gorgeous in every possible way.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to be like a perv or anything.
Not at all. You're allowed.
But there she was.
Yeah.
Okay. 14 stations on the tube, and there she was, beautiful. Yeah. Okay, even you know, you take the worst of your situations, the worst, and there is always something beautiful about them.
How beautiful!
Yes,
how beautiful! It's just finding the magic in every day, and sometimes there's difficult days, but it's coming back to the gratitude, to the essence of what we're here for, and we're here to live and experience.
That is all that life wants, is for you to be living.
Yeah, and there's one question that I always ask everyone before we end. And the question is, do you think life is unfair?
Moments of life, if you take them in isolation, are unfair.
Yeah.
When you look back at them 6 years later or 6 months later, they're the best things that ever happened to you.
Yeah.
In total, this is a very difficult way to end. But in total, if you take your life in this physical life, physical format alone, it might appear unfair.
Yeah.
But if you think that this physical life is just one level of a very big game that your non-physical form experiences, then I think it all balances out at the end.
Yeah.
People will tell me, but what about those who are born in poverty or those who are born in... you know, with a chronic disease or...
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's very difficult to believe that life is fair when you think of them. But when you really, really think deeply, what matters is how their life is lived. And for some of them, when you ask them, they'll tell you, yeah, I don't know any other way.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I know this is not a comparison, but I'm born in Middle Eastern. My name is Muhammad, not Mo, as you can imagine. But yeah, who buys books from Muhammad? So anyway, so my you know, as Muhammad Ali, I will never be allowed into an airport without being thought of as a terrorist.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
I'm not a terrorist. I hope I am a very kind person.
You are.
Okay?
Yes.
And I could look at that and say, life is unfair.
Yeah.
Hmm? Or I could look at that and say, but yes, being born in an Eastern Oriental culture taught me things that are very useful for my life and work in the West.
Yeah.
Okay. Everything in isolation can be seen as unfair. But if you put everything together, the story sooner or later works out.
Yeah.
And for those who we believe that life is so unfair to them, perhaps I think the lesson is for us to look and say, 1 million more reasons for gratitude. Because I am not one of them. Okay? Because I'm not the one that is struggling with all of this.
Yeah.
And if you're the one struggling with some of this, all I can do is you have my love and my compassion, which doesn't solve it. But at least you should know that you're not alone in it.
Yeah.
I think if we humans start to think of others as an extension of us, somehow things become fair.
Yeah. There's something about being collective, isn't there? Collective and having that support from one another. There's something really beautiful.
It's one of the compartment, one truth. We are one.
Yeah.
Okay. Whether you see it or not. We really are. It's the thing that propelled humanity into where we are today is not that we're the smartest. It's that we can do this.
Yeah.
It's that we can connect deeply and be one.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Thank you, Mo.
Thank you for having me. This was a wonderful conversation.
It really was.
Thank you.